With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Shamrock ACC Championship Edition.
Notre Dame, we go into the ship.
Yeah, Notre Dame is officially on to Charlotte with the Wake Forest game canceled. Brought a close to one of college football's weirder stories in a weirder season, the Clemson-Florida State kerfuffle. So, Matt, I guess, where were you when you found out Notre Dame was officially going to the ACC championship game, meaning they've been to more conference championship games than the Michigan football program?
I was just going to shout out my buddy Leo, who said Brian Kelly made a conference title game before Jim Harbaugh, which I got to say is a pretty good one. Funny enough, I just finished recording our Atlantic and Coastal pod, our athletic ACC podcast with Andy Bitter, where we talked about, like, all right, so how's this going to unfold if one team has a bye, if one team doesn't? And I kind of got on my high horse there about how the ACC also needs to come up with a better testing system so that teams don't go to Tallahassee on back-to-back Saturdays only to be told to get lost. And sure enough, all that comes to fruition right as we hang up. So we had a... we had to tinker with that one a little bit, and then I had to write about it. So, yay.
Yes. Yeah, it sounds like you are a little bit more engaged than I was coming back from Target getting my son glasses. I'm, like, checking my phone as I'm driving through South Bend. I'm like, oh, okay, I got to get home to deal with this. I don't know. Notre Dame's been going to Charlotte for... since they beat Clemson, and certainly since, you know, they had to lose to North Carolina and then lose to somebody else, which was not going to happen. But, I mean, Clemson is state of affairs there. They just have to beat Georgia Tech or Virginia Tech this weekend, and then they're on to Charlotte as well for round two. Probably not too early to talk about that one, considering Notre Dame versus Syracuse this weekend is not quite narrative rich.
Well, we need to pour it out for the Duke's Mayo Classic, since that got postponed twice and isn't happening at all.
The biggest loser is a can of mayonnaise in this.
And I do appreciate the ACC, like, using common sense.
Yes, that was
with
nice.
With both the testing and the schedules. Notre Dame was not the first team to clinch a conference championship berth this week. Northwestern was, and the Big Ten's too embarrassed to announce it because they don't want Northwestern to clinch it with 2 weeks left by cancellation. And that's exactly what happened. I literally did. I'm looking at the math when Northwestern's game gets canceled. I'm texting people at Northwestern. They're like, it was very, like, political. It's like, we haven't heard anything from the office yet, so we're not celebrating. So us in the media will call the race for them, essentially.
Yeah.
But Notre Dame at least gets to, well, they didn't win a division, so I don't know if they get to actually hang anything up yet until they win the actual conference. But we will come to that.
What's the ACC's big deal? Like, they had eight different coastal winners in eight different years?
Seven in 7 years.
So now it's like eight non-Atlantic division winners in 8 years. And one of them won't even be in your conference next year. But I guess another thing to tackle is the college football playoff rankings. And I want Notre Dame number 2, Alabama 1, and then Clemson 3, Ohio State 4, A&M 5, and Florida 6. I put this on Twitter last night, and the venerable Tim Beret, former Clemson SID, agreed with me, so you know it's true, but I'll put it to you. So riddle me this. Clemson beats Notre Dame in the ACC championship game by 7. Florida upsets Alabama in the SEC championship game. Is your college football field an ACC-SEC challenge, and Ohio State is out?
I think it should be.
Okay.
But that's the chaos nightmare scenario, right? Like Notre Dame versus Ohio State, essentially, for that fourth spot. And Brian Kelly has done a pretty good job of saying, like, hey, we already played, you know, the the politicking, if you will, after the Boston mm-hmm. College game, said, hey, we just finished a Big Ten season. We just did this. We just did that. This would be more interesting on a broader scale if it was a Big Ten team not named Ohio State in this situation, because I think Ohio State's going to more often than not get the benefit of the doubt, one, because they're Ohio State, and two, because they were in the playoff last year with a lot of the same players mm-hmm. and coaches, and I think the committee, that's good enough for them as far as the eye test. If this was Northwestern and they had two games canceled but they were undefeated, we're not having this conversation.
It's interesting when you say like the Ohio State brand. I wonder if there's a negative to that because Ohio State cannot beat Ohio State. Like if Northwestern beat Ohio State in the scenario you're talking about, that would, I think, enhance the credentials of blind Notre Dame or blind Big Ten team X. Whereas like Ohio State, what's their best win going to be?
Indiana.
Which is nothing, right? I mean, you struggled against Indiana.
I wouldn't. Did you watch that game?
It
was 35-7. They quit. Right. Like, they stopped playing. They had their way with them.
You cannot make accusations of teams quitting, Fortuna.
They quit well ahead. Yeah,
but I'm saying...
That's not the same as quitting.
The final score of that... I mean, Indiana had a chance to tie the game at the end. They very little chance to tie the game, but they had a chance. And still, it's Indiana. I mean, They're an awesome story. Michael Penix is an awesome story. All of that good stuff. It's still Indiana. If that is your best win versus Notre Dame having a win over Clemson, or Clemson having a win over Notre Dame, or Florida having a win over Alabama, or Alabama having a win over Texas A&M, like, I'm sorry. Indiana does not hold up at all in that scenario.
Well, not only that, North Carolina will probably be ranked at the end of the year,
too. They went up after losing to Notre Dame.
And if they beat Miami, who's... 6-1, 7-1 right now, they'll continue to go up.
And you know, Clemson has the Miami win, which I think looks better in the rankings than it felt at the time. I don't feel like Miami is a top 10 team, but I guess the point is just like, if you just did blind resumes, Ohio State is out in that scenario to me, even if they're an undefeated 6-0 team, because they will have beaten almost nobody.
Yeah, I mean, I think hell on earth would be Notre Dame fans and Ohio State fans complaining about who's the more aggrieved one in this scenario when they get left out.
It's a border war.
Yeah, around pretty much. Yeah, exactly. And the SEC would probably just be laughing at all of it. But, I mean, I don't – like, I feel bad, but I don't feel bad for Ohio State, if that makes sense. Like, they're a victim of really poor leadership at their conference this year.
Yeah.
And Ryan Day – I guess to his credit, called that out and helped get this season along when he tweeted basically calling out the commissioner's office on week one when Ohio State wasn't playing. And what do you know? A few days later, the Big Ten decides that daily testing is going to solve this pandemic and they're back.
Yeah, that
worked. It worked out really well. So I have a hard time like blaming Ohio State for this when it's not their fault. But at the same time, like, the Big Ten just isn't good this year on the field. Like, I've thrown this analogy out. Like, the Big Ten is Ohio State and 13 teams in a March Madness pool. Like, if you restarted the season today, like, how different is everything right now? Like, Michigan's probably still not great, but, like, Penn State lost to Indiana on a bad call in a game they deserved to lose, but on a bad call, and that bad call undid 30 years of bad karma for Indiana. And out of nowhere, Indiana goes on this run, and Penn State gets smacked by Ohio State like everyone does. And, you know, the wheels fall off there. Like, I don't know if there's, if I'm projecting the future of the Big Ten outside of, I don't think Jim Harbaugh will be at Michigan next year, and I think Ohio State will be really good again next year. I don't know if there's anything that's happened on the field this year that I could look at and say, all right, like, that's going to carry over to next year, or that program's in trouble because they had a bad year. Like, the whole thing's been kind of just chaotic outside of Ohio State being good. But the rest of the league hasn't helped them. And they're not going to play more than seven games. So,
no.
7-0? I don't think we're having this conversation with anyone else in the country other than a team with the recent and overall historic pedigree of an Ohio State.
I just, you know, watching the playoff rankings reveal last night when Barta, the AD at Iowa, talked about how they had a real discussion about whether A&M and Ohio State should flip after a weekend where A&M was not that impressive in beating A&M.
I watched that game start to finish.
That told me, like, assuming you take the committee at its word, which you do at your own risk, but to me, that says that the field would be Alabama, Florida, Clemson, Notre Dame in the scenario I talked about. Like that the committee would not hesitate to leave out an undefeated Ohio State. And it's like this notion of whether they win the conference championship or not is totally irrelevant to me. If they beat Wisconsin in the second place game, that would be more impressive to me than beating Northwestern for the conference championship, right?
Yes, but I don't think that's the conversation. I think the conversation is are you playing six games instead of seven games?
Yeah, which is probably that's what it's going to be, right? I mean, maybe they'll get to seven, but
they get to seven if they play the rest of their games. But if they miss one of the next 2 weeks. And I'm not going to go there because a certain big personality found himself in hot water for saying what I think a lot of people have said behind the scenes. But if they don't play one of their next two games, then they're eliminated from the Big Ten title game. But they do play that weekend, probably, like you said, against the Wisconsin, who's probably better than or more impressive than. Well, I can't say that. Northwestern handed Wisconsin pretty badly, so I don't want to take away from Northwestern. But, I mean, I don't think Ohio State's resume, if you will, is docked by their opponent that week. It's just the fact that they're playing three games short of what their initial schedule said they would play. And then we're talking about 6-0. And then I don't know how we even like look at them seriously.
No, I don't think that you could. And that's again, it's not. That's just sort of the state of affairs for Ohio State. Like it's not necessarily their fault, but this is the world we're living in, and I just cannot get my head around the idea of Ohio State getting in over a one-loss Notre Dame, a one-loss Florida, a one-loss Alabama, or a one-loss Clemson. I just cannot see it. But all will be revealed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I went on a radio show yesterday, and I got asked the opposite, which I hadn't ever considered, which was, could Clemson still get in if they lose to Notre Dame and chaos reigns? And I don't think so.
But I can't see.
It was, I mean, if Alabama wins out, beats Florida,
mm-hmm.
Notre Dame wins out, beats Clemson, you got Alabama and Notre Dame in there. Ohio State loses or is ineligible or is playing only six games. Like, who else fills out that field? I would guess A&M, if they still have only one loss in that win over Florida. Maybe the Big 12 champion, because even though it's a two-loss champion, I mean, we'd be talking about a two-loss non-champion in Clemson as the other one. And maybe Cincinnati in that scenario, if chaos raid, which, hey, why not? Like, let's get crazy.
Yes. Haven't we already?
Notre Dame, Cincinnati in the playoff. Then Notre Dame can talk about a game with nothing.
A 2021 matchup.
That's right. Talk about a game with like nothing like to gain from, even if you win that by like 40 if you're Notre Dame.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Like the national narrative, which I know everyone there really cares about.
Yeah. Other than you'd be in the national championship game. I mean, that would be one thing to gain from it. But I mean, other than that, Notre Dame this weekend at Syracuse. I don't know if there are some interesting stories this weekend. Most of them revolve around like the recruiting class of 2016 or Ian Book at 30 wins, which will break the all-time record, something that I'll be writing about for tomorrow on The Athletic. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on this weekend as Notre Dame looks to close out on a third undefeated regular season under Brian Kelly, a fourth in 11 years, undefeated at home. And this would be, I think, this would be their 16th straight win, if I'm not mistaken. I should have this like these win streaks tattooed on my wrist, so I always know them.
Well, you'd have to update them every week, so yeah, that'd be a bad idea. But close your eyes, find something to do on Saturday. It's not going to be fun. Like, God bless Syracuse. I mean, they're down to probably 55 scholarship players right now, and it's not like they were a powerhouse to begin with. Did you? I hate to even bring it up because it was so painful Did you watch the end of that NC State Syracuse game last
night? I saw the highlight of it. It was unfortunate.
I've never seen a bigger bleep-eating grin on my face than or on someone's face than I saw on Dave Doran's celebrating that win to basically assure him of going 8-3 with a backup quarterback after going 4-8 last year at NC State. But yeah, it's not good for Syracuse. I mean, I the line's, what's it up to now? 35?
Has it gone up to 35? I know it opened like at 32, 33.
It opened at 33. I mean, like we made this mistake when Syracuse played at Clemson. I think a week after Clemson beat Georgia Tech 73-7. And true. Syracuse actually hung around for like 2.5 quarters. Never a threat to win the game, but even Brent Venables came out afterward and was like, look, if you've had everyone telling you you suck for all season, like, you're going to come out upset and you're going to play really hard. I think that's easier to do in the middle of October than it is at the end of December of a pandemic-stricken season when you have half a roster and it seems like half the teams in the country have zero interest in playing football.
When anymore, you're playing outside at a high of 39 degrees.
That's right. Yeah. The dome insulates them from all of that. A lot of that weather up there in central New York. The line right now is 33.5, yeah. With an over-under of 51.5, which I always find amusing. Prediction.
I think Notre Dame will run them off the field. I'm more interested to see how many backups get in the game. Brendan Clark, I think this is in my mailbag today, but Brendan Clark, I think, has played 18 snaps all season. I don't think that is an ideal scenario when Ian Book's walking out the door after this year. You'd like to have a little bit more of a read on him if you're Notre Dame than you do in games. So sure. that would be something interesting to watch this weekend.
Sean Crawford's third senior day.
Yes.
Do I hear four?
Yeah. I think in the secondary, that's sort of the other backup reserve story that I'm most interested to see is because they haven't. They're not necessarily all that deep, despite DJ Brown and Houston Griffith playing well at North Carolina. So, can you get some of those freshman corners in there? Some of the redshirt freshman corners, redshirt freshman safeties, get them some experience because there hasn't been much evaluation of them. And then Notre Dame's season is going really well when people have stopped asking about the five-star freshman receiver who's not playing. But... maybe a few reps for Jordan Johnson would be interesting.
It's not because he got in trouble, which has happened in the past with five-star freshman receivers.
Throw people on a message board a bone, Brian Kelly. Get Jordan Johnson some reps. And then Ian Book is about to do something that has never been done in Notre Dame history, win 30 games as a starting quarterback. And I think that is a pretty cool story. Maybe that's something to discuss here. It's like, Ian Book's legacy coming out the door here is going to be what?
Right. And, you kind of feel bad. It's not going to be your typical crowd as far as like a senior send-off and getting the roses and everything else that you deserve. But I think these guys will be okay with that if they close out in a playoff game for their careers. I got asked this by a Notre Dame, for a longtime Notre Dame fan this week. He said, what? He goes, am I crazy? I know we all threw out the Joe Montana comparisons, when he first showed up against Wake Forest and led us to the playoff. But, is there a chance he could finish as the second best quarterback here, career-wise, beyond Montana? And I said, if he wins a national championship, absolutely. I think this being 2020 and this being a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately world, if they get smoked by Clemson in the ACC title game and smoked by whoever they play in the playoff, people will forget all the good of this year very quickly, and hopefully with the passage of time, they will come to their senses and appreciate what he did for this program. I'm not ready to go there just yet, but I think it's in the cards with a season like this one.
I think that if he wins a national championship, then you're talking about, I wouldn't go the best of all time because Notre Dame has championship quarterbacks who also won Heisman
trophies. Best other in Montana,
I think that would be a fair comparison. I mean, it's like you got to go back to the only other one in that gap is Tony Rice, who was a great college football player, but it was just a different offense, a different world at that point. So I think for Book, it's amazing to me how quickly the the script on him has flipped. And even though in the summer we talked about this, that if he beat, right, at the time it was Wisconsin and Clemson, but if he just beat Clemson one time, that people would view his legacy completely differently. And I'm still struck by just how different it feels, sure, about Ian Book from the Notre Dame fan base. Even though I knew this was coming, I'm still sort of blown away by how different it feels.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. You do what he did and do it in the fashion he did it. That's a legacy change. That's a legacy game, regardless of what happens throughout the rest of the year. It does reset the conversation of what this season could be. He did, by the way, I'd be remiss not to mention, as the orchestrator, conductor, whatever you want to call it, of our Heisman straw poll, he and Book got a vote this week amongst our staff of 44. It was, I believe it was from a person who covers a team that we were just talking about. No, it wasn't. I'm sorry. It was Brody Miller, our LSU writer, who voted him second this week, which brings up the question of, and I know some fans have asked this, like, what would it take for him to get in that mix? If he keeps playing at this level and if they beat Clemson again, I could see him being a finalist. Now, that depends largely on what happens elsewhere around the country. But you do that, you knock out Trevor Lawrence from contention. You would hope that the winner of the Kyle Trask-Mac Jones showdown in the SEC title game eliminates the other, though it's not that simple. Yeah. And then we'll see what happens with Breece Hall. There's a handful of other guys on Alabama who are getting votes every week. Don't know if Jared Patterson's a real threat from Buffalo, but it's really fun to talk about a MAC player putting up the numbers he is through four games, and that would be a great story as well. But I mean, I think it's possible.
When's voting? Like, when is the official vote for the Heisman?
It's after the they changed it this year, so it's actually after the first couple bowl games, which probably will not feature players in that mix. But it's
still in 2020 though.
The voting is it's after the December 19th like conference championship games.
Okay,
and then it's awarded, I believe, on January 7th. Okay, so yeah.
Again, I mean, why do we have to do it on January 7th again?
What do you mean?
Like, couldn't the whole season play out?
Oh, for like Heisman, you mean? Just in general?
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if Ian Book beats Trevor Lawrence in Charlotte and then turns around and beats Mac Jones in the playoff, like, I think that would probably change.
Yeah, I mean, look, we saw this in 2016, right, where Deshaun Watson finishes runner-up to Lamar Jackson and then wins a national title as Jackson flops in his final three games and Dabo and everyone saying, you know, like, Sean's the best player in the country. I get it. I do find it fascinating that college football, I'm not saying I disagree with you, but I feel like college football more than anywhere else, people really clamor for this award to be given out after the bowl games are played when no other sport judges MVPs on anything other than the regular season. And I know the dynamics are different, but so I mean, would it be better if it was awarded after? Probably. But like most things with this sport, it's largely a PR stunt and it's not going to be done after.
College football is so screwed up. Like, they only included bowl statistics in guys' career marks. Like, what was that, 15 years ago they started doing that? But they won't retroactively go back and do everybody else. It makes no sense. College football, what a screwed up, beautiful sport it is. And that's why we love it. All right, predictions this weekend. Give me a final score.
45-7, Notre Dame.
I am not going to disrespect Clark Lee's defense like that, so I'm going to say 52-0.
We didn't even talk about Clark Lee.
We should. Let's get into that. Clark Lee, coming, going, staying. There's a bunch of different ways to look at the Vanderbilt job. One is, how about we look at this? This is the first way to look at it. Would Clark Lee take it if offered?
I lean yes. I think, look,
I agree.
He knows this place better than any human being not currently employed by Vanderbilt. He's from Nashville. He played there. Still has family there. He knows enough about the history of that institution and about the current administration and their commitment or lack thereof to building a consistent winner there, where hypothetically, if he was their first choice and got offered, I think his yes or no answer would say everything you need to know about the potential of that program. The other part of it is, and yeah, obviously this all goes to personal preference, but I think it's human nature. If you're making, I don't know, close to $1 million a year and someone hands you a check for four, it's really hard to say no to that when it's staring you in the face.
Yeah. I'm all for quadruple.
You brought this up to me before we recorded, and it's a situation I had not considered, and it's one that I'm not sure a lot of athletic directors around the country have considered. They made this move because signing day is December 16th this year. Notre Dame plays in the conference championship game December 19th. So we've seen people juggle new jobs and playoff duties before. We saw it last year with Jeff Hafley at Ohio State, Jeff Scott at Clemson. We have not seen like this happen basically in season. And we've heard stories like Tony Elliott at Clemson and some other guys who've been longtime assistants elsewhere, where a lot of the reasons these guys don't get the opportunities that others get is because they say, don't bother to talk to me until my duties here are done.
And I feel like Clark Lee is more wired. Like
yeah, I don't think he's like I. He's not going around selling himself. He's not in a rush to get out of Notre Dame. He'd only leave for the right opportunity. Right.
I mean, he interviewed. To be fair, he interviewed
right, but it's
for
a Power
College
Five
last year.
Job, which but, is a 30.
Yeah, but it was like that was the Camping World Bowl.
Right,
a
right,
full
right.
Month between the end of the season and the bowl. It's just a completely different scenario, even though it's
no. I mean, they're playing for a national championship this year. And
yeah, but I'm with you. I think that he would take it if offered. One, like you said, he knows everything about that program. Two, Candace Lee, their athletic director, has talked about it, or at least hinted that clearly they're in the position to have to sell a better job than it was when Derek Mason took it with facilities and infrastructure. So if that's true, that's a positive. And then I'm sort of view it as like, okay, they gave Derek Mason 7 years without a winning season. There's a lot of patience there. That you're not going down there and you're going to get run out of there after 3 years if you're not getting it done. They're going to give you a lot of time, and they may even give Clark Lee more time than they gave Derek Mason because he's sort of one of their own. So it's, I think it's a much better job than I think people make it out to be, even though the difficulties of it are fairly obvious.
I think it can be. I mean, Joe Rexroad, one of our writers from Tennessee, wrote a great story over the summer looking at kind of the internal dysfunction there that Candace Story Lee, the athletic director, walked into. And so, like, there are a lot of moving parts there. I mean, it's a place that's never really taken football seriously. Even if you watch them on TV in a normal year, you know, they play good teams at home, and, like, that stadium's not really full or rocking as cool of a place as Nashville is. So, I mean, they're sitting head coaches who I think have no interest in that job because they think they can wait out for better jobs or can play their ways into better jobs where they are now. But there's something to be said for coming home, so to speak, for being an under 40 coordinator who's probably, I don't know this, I'd imagine he gets at least an interview, whether it's serious or not. I mean,
I don't know how you couldn't.
I don't know. It'd be malpractice to not make that call to gauge his interest if you're Vanderbilt right now, assuming it hasn't already happened. But, I would think he'd take it, but I don't know if that's like some dream job he's been waiting to open up his whole life.
Yeah, I feel like when he arrived at Notre Dame, it probably was. And I think, I don't know if you've talked to him about his Vanderbilt experience, but I threw this in the mailbag today. They were terrible when he was there, like really bad, like pretty much Derek Mason level bad. And he had an awesome experience there. 4-29 during his 3 years.
Pretty much the opposite of his Notre Dame record.
Yeah. But I mean, I say that in the sense of like the idea that you can't win there. You're not going to win an SEC championship there. But I don't think that Clark Lee would view success or failure at Vanderbilt through wins and losses, because that's just not really who he is as a person. Could he get to James Franklin level of success? James Franklin beat one ranked team in 3 years, and we sort of view him as like the greatest coach in Vanderbilt history. It's not a huge, not a super high bar to clear, but I don't think Clark Lee would be worried too much about, hey, we went 4-8 this year. That was an abject failure. I think he would look at, hey, we went 4-8. These kids had good experiences. They graduated. We were competitive. Like we played hard. I just think he views college football through a different lens than most of us, which is I think why he will ultimately be a great head coach somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's why he could succeed there. I mean, like you said, James Franklin was the hottest coach in the country coming out of Vanderbilt because he did what had never been done there before, which still, as you said, was modest compared to most SEC schools' expectations. I think the East then was a little bit easier than the East now. You didn't have Georgia rolling, at least recruiting-wise, the way they are now. Florida seems to have finally gotten its act together as well. But I think if you have realistic expectations, I imagine because it's Vanderbilt, they would. Like, we're not asking you to beat Georgia and Florida every year, but can you beat a down Tennessee? Can you beat an also rebuilding South Carolina? Missouri with a young coach.
Kentucky.
Kentucky, who's Kentucky. I know they're a good team every year, but never a real threat. Put yourself in Clark Lee's shoes. Do I want to be the head coach of Notre Dame someday? I know Notre Dame would love that. They're not going to make it happen tomorrow, probably. But if that's your goal, yeah, go to Vanderbilt. The minute you win eight games there, if the timing's right, you're probably on the short list of people Notre Dame calls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that he will be in the Rolodex at Notre Dame in 2025, if that's the year that Notre Dame has a new coach. And I think that's whether he stays here and is a DC or whether he goes to Vanderbilt and is a 500 coach over 3-4 years. I just think he's got enough credibility in the bank around Notre Dame that people know what he's about and, you know, that he would be a good fit here. Again, I'm not saying that he would get it at Notre Dame, but he would get an interview.
Yeah, I think he'd have to. I think the guy he'd be replacing could be a fit to replace him at Notre Dame.
Derek Mason?
As DC at Notre Dame?
Who wanted to fight Brian Kelly 2 years ago?
You know, I wonder how many times Tommy Rees wanted to fight Brian Kelly when he was playing for him.
But he didn't say it in a press conference. I mean, that was also brought up in the mailbag, and I'm just like, guys, Derek Mason essentially publicly challenged Brian Kelly to come to Nashville to fight him after Brian Kelly accused Vanderbilt of playing, quote, bad football in a game that, frankly, was bad in 2018. So, Derek Mason would not be my guy. I guess that's a – maybe we'll save that conversation for the podcast if Notre Dame actually does need a new DC, but Derek Mason would not be my first choice because I don't know if there's going to be a personality match there with Brian Kelly.
We'll see. I don't know the guy. I've heard nothing but great things about him from a personality perspective. When you look at his pedigree coming into Vanderbilt, it was similar to Clark Lee's. I mean, he was a guy that NFL teams were just couldn't get enough of as far as visiting Palo Alto to see what they were doing and running on defense back when Stanford really had it rolling. And it made him a really hot coach. So we'll see. That's probably another conversation for another time. But when you have your second undefeated season in 3 years, we're going to have these conversations. Probably not just about Clark Lee in the coming weeks.
No, it's a good place for Notre Dame to be. Even though it's some uncomfortable conversations from a fan perspective, I think on message boards, I think you got this reaction too. It's like, stop promoting Clark Lee as a head coaching candidate. As if people
Vanderbilt didn't know who he was until.
As if people in the industry are like, who? Clark Lee. Oh, that guy. Yeah, I wondered why Notre Dame's defense was so good. So, yeah.
By the way, who's starting center this weekend?
I believe that it will be Josh Lugg if Zeke Correll cannot go with an ankle sprain. So, it's a little bit of a sidebar story, but. That I think is one of the reasons why the Wake Forest game getting canceled is such a positive for Notre Dame and Florida State being canceled for Clemson as well. But that I don't think is going to change my into my 52-0 prediction.
45-7.
I would have said 77-3 maybe if I knew the offensive line was at full strength. But 52-0 for me. What were you? 44-7?
45-7.
We'll have a lot of statistics to talk about on our wrap-up podcast on Saturday.
45-7 would actually get them right now half point over. It opened at 52.5. It's now 51.5. That was not by design by me, so don't.
Well, yeah, that's why I picked under as 52-0.
There you go.
So it will be strained to find some interesting storylines to pull out of Saturday, but without it's Notre Dame football, so we'll definitely find some. So until then. He's Matt Fortuna. I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for listening to our latest episode of The Shamrock.
Thank you.